ulele uale ule ulelei. Uale ulele uale ule ulelei.
Welcome to the Wild Mother Podcast for women who want to birth, mother, and live with pleasure, purpose, and power. The wisdom of Mother Nature is our guide as we dive deep into the subjects of physiologic birth, natural parenting, and conscious mothering. Join me, Dr. Jessica Hodgins, for evidence-based and soul-centered conversation with guest experts and real mamas just like you. Let's go. Welcome to episode 7 of the Wild Mother Podcast. Today's episode is actually the second half of my conversation with the incredible Dr. Melanie Jackson. So if you missed last week's episode, Mama, don't forget to go back and have a listen, because in that first half of our conversation, Mel and I covered everything you need to know about all the practical details of how to have a home birth. In today's episode, Melanie and I talk about Mel's research into birth outside the system. And this is where Mel and I get pretty raw and real. So we talk about Mel's research into why women choose to birth outside the system. And hint, it isn't because they're reckless risk takers. Quite the opposite, actually. We talk about what this research tells us about the state of maternity services and the prevalence of obstetric violence. And we talk about what we as women, as consumers of maternity services, can do to support home birth midwifery. Because despite it being the gold standard, this model of care is actually only available to a tiny percentage of women, and it's increasingly under threat. So if you didn't get introduced to Mel in last week's episode, let me reintroduce her now. Melanie Jackson is a privately practicing midwife. She completed her PhD called Birth Outside the System in 2015, and she's held positions in midwifery research, midwifery lecturing, and national policy development at the Australian College of Midwives, as well as running a brilliant YouTube channel where she breaks down research that's relevant to pregnancy and birth, amongst many other incredible offerings. So safe to say, Mel is a gift for women, families, and birth workers, and it's my absolute privilege to have her on the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, mamas, it would mean the world to me if you left a review over on iTunes. I know they say that in like every podcast, right? But it really does help to get the podcast in front of other wild mamas who could also benefit from these conversations. And this is a subject that I'm really passionate about. I really think that women need to have the whole story about the models of care that are available to them in their pregnancy. So you can also share the podcast with other mamas just by taking a screenshot and sharing it on Instagram. That's another really easy way to get this information in front of other women. And don't forget to tag me at Dr. Jessica Hodgins. And now, mamas, it's my absolute pleasure to return to this epic conversation with the brilliant Dr. Melanie Jackson. So Mel, right at the start, I started asking you about your journey into the work that you're doing, and you got to the point of your midwifery practice, but I know since then you've also moved into research. So as a midwifery researcher, can you tell us a little bit about that shift into academia and like what your research was? What was your PhD about?
Yeah, so my PhD was called Birthing Outside the System, Wanting the Best and Safest. So this came out of, I'd finished midwifery I was coming to the end of doing midwifery at uni, and one of the lecturers pulled me aside and said, have you considered postgraduate study? And I was like, well, yeah, I didn't understand what she meant. It wasn't really my world. It wasn't something I aspired to. She said, oh, you know, like a master's. I said, no, I've already done a master's. I'm not doing another master's. She said, what about a PhD? And I said, what? No, I'm not. That's not me. Like, I didn't identify as somebody who could complete a PhD. I didn't do particularly well at school. So I kind of felt like maybe I'm not that smart to do that. And I said that to the lecturer, and she said, oh, have you seen the idiots who do PhDs? And I was like, what? And she said, you can definitely do it. She said, look, go and speak to Hannah Dahlen about this. And I was like, oh, okay. So I literally kind of Hannah did a careers day, was part of a careers day for us where they kind of present to you options in midwifery, and she was talking about postgraduate research. So afterwards I said, oh, one of the lecturers suggested that maybe I should do some postgraduate study. I don't really know what that is or what why I would do that. And she said, look, just come to my office, bring your transcript, we'll have a chat. So I went along really not knowing even what a PhD was or why I would be wanting to do that. And I said, oh, I bought my transcript. And she sort of had a look at it. She goes, yeah, you should be doing some research. She said, look, go home, just think of a topic that you're passionate about and come back and we can discuss it. So I was like, okay. And I took some time to think about it. And I remember just sort of sitting up in the middle of the night one night going, oh, birth outside the system. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking into Hannah's office and I said, I've got it, birthing outside the system. And she said, yes, yes, it's happening. So she goes, okay, all you got to do now is you've just got to present this to the uni and present it as something that needs to be researched. So I was like, okay. So it's just kind of this series of little steps of people sort of going, you should do this. And I kind of went along with it. So then you present this to the uni and they sort of go, yeah, this is worth researching. We'll approve this as a PhD topic. So I did that. They thought it was very worthwhile. And I thought, okay, well, I kind of need a scholarship to do this. I can't afford to just be studying full time. So I applied for a scholarship and I didn't get it because I wasn't experienced enough. And so Hannah said to me, that's okay, you're going to work as my research assistant for the year. I'll pay you. We can work on studies. You can publish some papers and that'll be enough to get you into the PhD. So that's what we did. She paid me to be her research assistant for the whole year. And I was also working with a private midwife doing home births at the same time. So this was year one after finishing my midwifery qualification. I was all of a sudden being mentored by these amazing people.
Wow, yeah.
To do PhDs and research and home birth. I was like, I've just landed into this amazing situation. And so then the following year I got into the PhD program with a full scholarship and finished my thesis. I had a baby in the middle as well, little Charlie. So he would come along with me to as I presented at research, you know, at conferences and things. And so birthing outside the system became the topic, and it was basically looking at what motivates women to give birth outside of socially accepted sort of safe birth options. Mm. So we were looking at high risk home birth and free birth. Mm-hmm. So these were two options that really are considered unacceptable in a medical kind of medicalized paradigm of birth. And we wanted to know why women would do that. And it was specific to Australia. Mm-hmm. And when I started, it became obvious that there really was not a lot of academic research into this group of women, and they were basically just demonized by the media and everyone just thought they must just be idiots. Yeah. You know, and I was like, it can't be true. Like it can't be that way. And so then what we discovered is actually this group of women is incredibly intelligent. Mm-hmm. So when we looked at the demographics of the people that were involved in the study, 70% of them were university qualified and had postgraduate degrees. When you look at the rest of the population, it's about 23%. Mm-hmm. So an incredibly educated group of people making these choices. And then as you start to explore why they would choose those things, is basically we worked out that, and it wasn't really a surprise, I don't know why I was surprised, but that women will always choose what they perceive to be best and safest for their birth. Mm-hmm. And for these women, free birth and high-risk home birth were the safest when they had a look back to see at what else they would be offered. Mm-hmm. And so what actually happened is we realized that in comparison to the care that they would have gotten in the hospital, the option of free birth and high-risk home birth was so much brighter and so much safer for them on an emotional level, social level, you know, physical, all these things. And a lot of these women had trauma from their previous birth experiences, and they just really articulated the problems with the hospital system and mm-hmm. why it's better not to engage with it. So you know, the conclusion was is basically free birth is just a result of a system that doesn't work for women.
Yeah.
In the same way as high-risk home birth.
Mamas, a quick interruption here, because if you're listening to this episode, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume it's because you're interested in having a beautiful, undisturbed, physiologic birth. Did you know that the vast majority of women are capable of having a physiologic birth? So research from around the world tells us that about 85% of women are capable of giving birth without interventions. But despite all this, only a very small percentage of women in developed countries today actually birth their babies without pharmaceuticals or interventions. So if you're wondering why that is and how you can maximize your chances of having a safe and empowering physiologic birth, I want to invite you to grab your free copy of my guide, The 4 Things You Actually Need to Know to Prepare for a Physiologic Natural Birth. You will find precisely zero fluff here. I put this 20-page guide together to resource you with everything you need to have the birth that you dream of without the misinformation overload you get from searching all over the internet. I am tired of seeing mamas waste their time with distracting, irrelevant, and incorrect information and practices that don't actually make a difference to your likelihood of getting the physiologic birth that you want. So in this guide, I'm giving you the evidence-based information as well as the practical strategies that I know work, because these are the things that have supported me and the mamas I serve to have safe, beautiful, empowering physiologic births. So you'll find that guide linked in the show notes. Go and download it right now before you forget, or you can jump online and you'll find it at jessicahodgins.com/guide to birth. That's jessicahodgins.com/guide to birth. It's called The 4 Things You Actually Need to Know to Prepare for a Physiologic Natural Birth, and it's yours to download now. Okay, back to the conversation, mamas.
So that was the PhD. Birthing outside the system. And yeah, there's since, so Hannah was my supervisor for that, and another professor, Virginia Schmid, and they went on to edit the book, Canary in the Coal Mine, Birthing Outside the System.
Yeah,
get it off my bookshelf.
And I haven't read the book, but as you were saying that, I was just thinking to myself, yeah, it is the canary in the coal mine, isn't it? Like,
it is.
When women are choosing to birth outside the system, is not a sign that women are taking reckless risks with the lives of their babies. They're making very educated, calculated decisions, and it just illustrates the failure of the system.
Right. Yes, that's exactly right. And so, that was my thesis. And then, so now we're just still writing papers and all that kind of stuff. So that I finished that in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really weird. I still don't identify, you know, my husband teases me and calls me Dr. Mel, and I'm like, stop, I don't know, and it's I still don't identify as that. Some people are like, you gotta own it, you gotta.
I was the same, and I didn't call myself Dr. And mine was like in a completely different field. My PhD was a totally different field, but didn't call myself Dr. for ages, and then I just changed it on Instagram because I'm like, screw it. Like, what is different about me is that I do have the research training. Like, I know how to research. So that's where I kind of was like, I'm just going to own it.
Yeah.
Did you see a few years ago there was a thing, what was it called? There was a hashtag, immodest woman, because this female researcher got criticized for calling herself doctor, which she was. Some guy criticized her like, oh, you're not even a real doctor. You're just a PhD, whatever. So she was like, yeah, I'm an immodest. And that's what he called her, an immodest woman. So it started a hashtag movement, and it encouraged a lot of other women with PhDs to own it and say, yeah.
Maybe I'm going to have to change my Instagram tag.
Totally. Dr. Melanie Jackson. I want Dr. Melanie the midwife.
I know. I absolutely joke. I'm a doctor of midwifery, like such a thing. Yeah, so I have to come to terms with that is part of me now.
Yeah.
And I think it does just position you to be able to, like, to not feel frightened by reading research papers and saying, this is what it says.
Yeah.
So to confidently do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, the research, this is what I've got Dr. Rachel Reed's book open on my bedside table at the moment, Reclaiming Childbirth as a Rite of Passage. And it just is illustrating so starkly the total mismatch between research, evidence, and practice. Mm-hmm. And this is like, there needs to be a huge cultural shift in recognizing and like implementing research evidence in practice around childbirth.
Totally. So that's what people have to understand too, is that hospitals aren't necessarily providing evidence-based care. They're providing policy-based care, and the policies might have been based on evidence from 15 years ago, but it's not current. And a lot of midwives don't even realize that they're not providing evidence-based care because they think that the policies are evidence, mm-hmm. or enough evidence. And you're like, just because you do it that way, it doesn't mean that that's where the evidence sits. So I think, we have to continually challenge it. And that's where I think probably people who are comfortable with research should be putting it out there for people who haven't been able to develop that skill set in, to say, this is what the actual evidence says.
Because there is an assumption that, and amongst consumers as well, there's an assumption that people, healthcare providers are doing this because it's evidence-based. Like, why else would they do it? I struggled with this for so long. I was like, is it because they hate women? Why are they doing this? Like, all of the research clearly illustrates that, X, and yet they're doing Y. Why would they do? They must hate women. And, maybe some do. It's not that. It's a lack of, it's a cultural thing. They're just informed by the culture around them.
Yes, and the culture of the workplace. And if all of a sudden everybody does a CTG for this reason, and you sort of go, well, that's not evidence-based, and like, that's how we do it, you know, you would be in a really hard position as a midwife in a hospital setting doing things differently to the rest of the workplace.
Yeah.
It's very complex, but certainly, hospitals are described as giving culture-based, policy-based care, mm-hmm. and for a midwife to step out of that, she opens herself up to a lot of activities that would be trying to bring her back into line. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenging space to be.
Yeah, it is. It's so challenging for midwives, and I am grateful to midwives working in the system and like who are aware of this issue and are still there to support women. I have so much gratitude to those midwives.
All the energy that would take is just so much.
It's huge.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Mal, we've talked about how amazing home birth midwifery care is. One of the problems with this is that, and you touched on this earlier, that home birth midwives are few and far between, and those who are available just book up so quickly. So unless a woman is like super informed before she even gets pregnant, it can be really difficult to access this, even though we know it's the gold standard of care, can be really difficult for so many women to access. So can you give us, I know this is a massive question, but the short version of why are home birth midwives so few and far between, and what can we as women, as consumers, do to support home birth midwifery?
Yeah, so it's hard to become a home birth midwife because there are so many requirements that are put upon us before we can even become insured as a privately practicing midwife. So when I started, you literally purchased your kit and then started taking on clients, and that was it. You registered midwife.
I was so surprised when you said that. I was like, oh my God, what about all the hours you've got to get? So that's right. Obviously more recent.
Yeah, there was none of that. There was, you literally got a kit. The difference was is that we didn't have insurance though. So you stepped into it knowing that you were an uninsured healthcare provider. We were allowed to do that, and we made women aware that that's what was happening. But, that's what made it easy, is that there was no red tape. Mm-hmm. So now we have insurance for antenatal and postnatal care, and we're required, in order to become eligible for that and eligible for Medicare, we have to have 5,000 hours of midwifery experience, which is equivalent to about 3 years full time. Just to become eligible for Medicare and to be endorsed as a, eligible. They keep changing the wording, but there's endorsement, eligibility, it's the same thing. So basically all of that is a requirement in order just to get insurance, and we have to be insured in order to be registered. So it's all linked into our registration and insurance and Medicare requirements. The other thing that we need is postgraduate qualification in pharmacology. So... you have to first be a midwife with 5,000 hours, postgraduate pharmacology qualification before you'll even be considered to get insurance as a midwife. So there's a lot of barriers there already. There are midwives who want to be doing home birth but just can't emotionally manage the 5,000 hour requirement of having to be in a hospital for that long. That's very, very hard.
Yeah.
That's a big barrier. The study is not so much of a barrier. I find midwives are very willing to learn, very willing to do, you know, that kind of stuff. Sure, what do you need me to learn? I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Then when you are actually qualified, there's this undertow of hostility from, you know, other healthcare providers and APRA, you know, a lot of people don't like the fact that midwives are doing home birth. It's frightening. It's unknown. Women love it, and that's a threat to other services. Mm. So, you know, Jo Hunter's done some research around private midwives being reported to the HCCC and through the APRA process. And I think the stats are something like 50% of private midwives are reported, and not by their clients. They're reported by other healthcare providers. And most of the time it's for absolutely nothing at all. And all of the complaints are nothing to answer for us, but we are put through the process of having been reported and having to answer that and having to defend ourselves. Mm. So that can be very stressful, knowing that we're in a bit of a hostile environment like that. And it's also tricky to find a stage of life that suits being on call 24/7.
Yeah.
So for me, we've kind of built our life around knowing that I'm on call. Mm-hmm. So my husband's work has always been flexible enough that he can step in with the kids and things if that's what we need. And I've got a supportive network of people who know that I can call for anything, and they're like, yeah, sure, no worries, we're in. So that's quite unique, but that's certainly something that has to be in place in order to be able to work this way, you know, in the on-call way. And the other thing I think is hard is that we are our own business owners.
Mm.
So not only do you have to have skills in midwifery and then overcome the barriers of, you know, just being able to get insurance, is then you have to also feel confident or gather skills to how to actually run your own business.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that goes into it. And so it deters midwives. And that kind of motivated me. Last year, I started a mentorship.
I'm so excited about this. Yeah. I'm so grateful to you for doing it, because we need more home birth midwives. So, yeah, please tell us about that.
Well, it kind of started, you know, just over time. And as I got more experience as a private midwife and a little bit more out there and more known, other midwives who wanted to become private midwives would just kind of email and go, oh, how can I start? What do I need to do to get started? And one week I said to my husband, oh, I feel like all day I've been replying to emails from midwives who were keen to get into private practice. I was like, I don't really have time to keep doing it at this level.
Mm.
But I don't want to say no, that I won't help them, because that's part of the problem, is that it's so hard to find help to get started. I was like, I feel really obliged to actually really help these people, but I can't actually be doing it off my own back at this point with the amount of work that I've got on. And he said, why don't you create something formal, like something a bit more organized that you could offer them so they can get started, but you don't have to be doing it for everybody individually all the time.
Mm.
So this was like literally a 9 o'clock at night kind of discussion before bed.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I don't think people would take that up. I don't know if that would work. And he said, well, just test it out. Like, see if people are interested. So literally the next morning, I got on Instagram and just went, hey, if anyone's thinking about becoming a private midwife, I thought maybe I'd do some kind of mentorship. You know, if you're interested, if this is something that interests you, sign up to this email list. So I just thought, oh, well, at least then I can gauge if there's interest out there and if this is something worth pursuing. And that day, 100 people signed up.
Oh, wow. Just in one day, just based on one Instagram post.
Yes, this one little, and it was so, like, I literally just sort of got out of the shower. My hair was all over. It wasn't like anything planned. It's just like, hey, does anybody actually need help with this? So the first day, 100 people signed up to say, oh, my gosh, we'd be so interested in that. And I was like, whoa, okay. So then the next day there was like 50 more, and I thought, oh, okay, no, there's no way I could ever manage. Yeah. Like, if this is the number of people who are interested. So I was like, okay, I'm going to shut down the email list now because I can't possibly imagine if I left it open for even another week how I would manage that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the mentorship was born. I was like, okay, there is interest. Then I thought, well, I'll open up kind of enrollments for a week and see how many people join. And so 26 midwives joined that first year enrollment. Yeah. So they're still now going through the mentorship. It's an online program, but then part of it is also that you've got unlimited email access to me for any of the, you know, as you go through the content and you start building your practice. Then you can just email me and say, you know, I'm up to this. What do I do next? And then there's also monthly Zoom sessions with everybody in the mentorship. And they've been very valuable. And then in the online content, there's lots of sections under there for people to write comments and ask questions. So I get on there and answer questions that way. So it's very, very interactive.
Mm.
And already at least three or four of them have left their jobs and they're working in full-time private practice.
Yes.
So that's really amazing, because really the whole idea of it was to get more private midwives who feel confident and equipped and that they've done all the things they have to do and they can go forward. So, all, you know, and they all share their joys with each other. Like, I got my endorsement and I just booked my first client. And, oh, my gosh, you know, one woman said I've just the first home birth in about my area for 10 years. And and so it's been very fruitful. So that opens again. So, again, it's once a year I open it up because I'm managing the whole thing. So that opens up again in October for the next enrollment.
Oh, exciting.
Yes. So it's kind of, yeah, I imagine if there was just even three or four new midwives every year.
Exactly. When you've just said there's only 200 privately practicing midwives in Australia, three or four is it like a huge, proportionally a huge addition to that number.
And each of them will be getting, like, they're recruiting second midwives as well. And so then, you know, the idea is that even if I start this, that now those midwives who are mentored through the program, they'll just personally mentor the next midwife who's working with them. And so you know, we can do this for ourselves. This is not a unique system, basically, but it's hard to approach a private midwife and say, please, can you invest in me and teach me how to do this? Because that requires a commitment from the other midwife too. So, yeah, I think mentorship is the way in to becoming a private midwife. So it's just about either finding someone who can do that or obviously this mentorship program is an opportunity as well.
Oh, it's so amazing. And for any midwives who are listening, who are even considering going into private practice, as a like home birthing woman, I'm strongly encouraging you to consider it, because we need privately practicing midwives so desperately. And I'm so grateful to you, Mel, for setting this up. And I hope that people will, and I know that they will take up the opportunity to be mentored by you. Because it is, I can see all these massive barriers, and it also must be so bloody lonely to be working in this very hostile environment with so few privately practicing midwives. So just to have that community as well that you're creating through the mentorship is so important.
Yeah.
I know you have some other amazing offerings available to women as well. You have your transformative birthwork course. I'd love to hear a little bit about what that is.
Yeah. So again, that was born out of just being very busy and women kind of approaching me and saying, oh my gosh, you know, I am giving birth in the hospital, but I want somebody there with me to advocate for me. And I don't know how to do that myself. Can you help me? And that was really challenging because it sort of sits outside of the model that I normally offer with continuity of care and does kind of fall more into the realm for doulas and things. But I was certainly getting inquiries about how do I navigate the system. So transformative birthwork was kind of born out of that, but also partly my PhD work, where, you know, we know that women actually just value autonomy in the birth space and a good birth and a positive experience is not necessarily linked to the outcome. So even women who have had a cesarean section that they weren't planning, if they made that choice themselves and felt confident in it and felt supported and felt like they had made the decision, that actually leads to an experience that is positively transforming. And so this course isn't about like everybody having a vaginal birth or everybody giving birth at home or anything like that. It's about how to exercise your autonomy so that you've got the choice in your birth so that at the end you are positively transformed. Because what we know about birth is whether you believe it or not, it's transformative.
Yeah.
And you can dictate whether or not it's going to be a positive transformation or a negative one. Mm. So you will change. You don't have a choice in that. And so this course is about helping women to forge a path towards positive transformation. So it goes through right from the beginning about different philosophies of birth and to see if you can position yourself. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the things about having a positive birth is that your personal philosophy is aligned to your care providers and then also to the place of birth that you choose.
Yeah.
So for a woman who really believes that she wants a normal vaginal birth and doesn't want any intervention, if she then goes and hires a private obstetrician in a private hospital, there's an immediate malalignment in her mm-hmm. philosophy and the philosophy of her choices that she's making. So she's setting herself up for disappointment.
Yeah.
So the first few modules go through how to identify your own philosophy and then how to make choices of your birthplace and care provider based on that.
Yeah.
So similarly, if a woman's really keen on a cesarean section and all the medical intervention she could possibly need or want, I'd say, well, don't hire yourself a private midwife and don't plan a home birth. Mm-hmm. You would feel good by hiring a private obstetrician in a private hospital because that's where you're going to most likely get what you want.
Yeah.
So then it talks about how to get your support people on your level as well and not compromising based on their philosophy. So there's a bit of conflict resolution that goes on, like, mm-hmm. okay, now you've identified yours, help your support people identify their philosophies and then ways to bring them on board with your plans. And then it goes through understanding the system. So how is the system set up? What is policy? What are your rights within that? We talk all about consent and your rights in consent. And then there's a whole section called power strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 10 strategies for working through scenarios that come up in hospitals frequently and how to come out as the authority in those scenarios. So I encourage women to make a script. So this is a really easy way of navigating things. So when you're in hospital, just coming up with some one-liners that will give you the space to be able to make decisions. So I think the most powerful one is, thank you for that information. I'd like 15 minutes to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody leaves and you've got space to go, okay, what are they talking about? What other questions do I have? You're under no obligation to make a decision on the spot while someone's staring at you, given you 30 seconds of information. So it's got a whole list of strategies like that. And it's myself, it's Professor Hannah Darlin, Dr. Kirsten Small, Dr. Rachel Reed, and another midwife, Jessie. She's a lecturer, a university lecturer in Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all of us on there and we've all done different little sections. So that's on my website as well, Transforming Birthwork. It's actually on sale at the moment, just because of the restrictions that women have got during COVID and not able to take in the support people that they want.
Yeah, it's especially needed.
Yeah, so I've taken $200 off that so wow. that women can access it and use it so they can, empower themselves to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
That's what that is as well.
Yeah. It just sounds incredible and it's so needed for, so many women who even, say want to have a home birth and for whatever reason are unable to and, therefore need to birth in the hospital, to give them the skill set to be able to navigate that and still get the birth that they want on their terms. But to have that skill set, because if you're going to walk this path of trying to navigate this system, you need the skills to be able to do it and that just the knowledge of what this system is.
Yes.
So it just sounds incredible. About it. Like, what an amazing resource for women. Thank you for creating it.
That's okay. Again, it's all this stuff just comes out of necessity. And like, how can I get this information out without personally, tapping into every single person who needs it? Mm-hmm. So, that was kind of the motivation behind
it. Oh, I love it. You've done so much for women and for midwives and for birth. So thank you for everything that you've done and that you're continuing to do.
Oh, thanks.
Now, how can people connect with you further? Where are you? Can they on your website or Instagram?
Yeah. I'm sort of online, my midwifery stuff is on my website, melaniethemidwife.com.
Mm-hmm.
The online stuff the transformative birthwork and mentorship, and also the backup bank, which we didn't talk about, but that's all on transformativebirthwork.com. And I am on Instagram and Facebook at Melanie the Midwife. And I have a YouTube channel as well, which is Melanie the Midwife on YouTube. And basically the idea of that is to just read research papers and present them in a way that is understandable for, you know, the biggest number of people possible. And I just kind of really go through particular topics that are big for women, you know, GBS screening, CTGs, the current COVID vaccine, vaginal exams, all that kind of stuff.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to link to all of that in the show notes so that people can find you and learn from you, because you've already put, yeah, all of this amazing resources out for people. And of course, so you're practicing in the Blue Mountains region, is that right?
Yeah.
So for any Blue Mountains mamas, Mel is available as a privately practicing midwife if you contact her before you're even pregnant.
And, you know, and I just want to encourage midwives as well that this time through COVID, if you're thinking about launching into private practice, like, this is the time, because women are starting to realize the shortfalls that they can experience in the hospital, and the number of inquiries that are coming through to private midwives. And this is the same experience I've been hearing from a lot of private midwives, is that, you know, the number of inquiries is probably gone up by like 10 or 15 fold. We can't look after them all. Women are desperate to explore other options. So, you know, if you think you're not going to be able to start a group, not be able to start a practice as a private midwife through fear that you won't get clients, like, that, you can let that go, because there are women there. So that's something that women can do, is actually keep putting demand on for private midwives, because that spurs everybody on to sort of go, oh my gosh, we need more private midwives. It encourages private midwives to sort of go, oh, I think I need more help. And we start reaching out to other people who we think want to be private midwives. It's like, you come help me, please. There's heaps of inquiries. By pushing and inquiring, then you open up the opportunity for midwives to kind of step into the role.
Yeah.
You know, if there's more private midwives than women, then that's a problem. But, you know, and then we've got this other problem of being more women than midwives, and that also creates solutions where midwives sort of go, hey, we have to help.
Yeah.
So that's something women can do, is start seeking private midwives and they will arrive.
Yeah, put the call out. I appreciate you saying that so much, because I've copped criticism for advocating for home birth from people saying, well, there aren't enough home birth midwives, so you're setting women up for disappointment. And I find that kind of insulting for women. Women need to have the information to then demand the gold standard of care, and women are demanding it. This one silver lining to COVID is that, yeah, the women's demand for home birth midwives is huge, and nowhere near enough home birth midwives to meet it. So yes, please, if you're a midwife and you're even vaguely considering it, you won't have trouble finding clients.
No, this is the time. And I'm currently working, because I work at Western Sydney University as a researcher as well, we're working on the birth in the time of COVID study, and we're looking at how women have fared basically compared to their model of care. And the women who have had private midwives, or even the continuity of care programs in hospitals, are feeling a lot less impact than women who are going through the more fragmented sort of options of the antenatal clinic. There's so much research that's coming out about the benefit and the resilience of these models to adapt to sort of global crisis.
Yeah, wow.
And so I think that there will be a change when we're finished with this pandemic and everyone can sit back and have a look and go, okay, what could we have done better? Then there's so much more motivation now to start supporting midwifery continuity of care models. There was already enough, but I think that this has really brought it to the fore, especially when women will start to realize that and move out of the system themselves. Then that motivates midwives to sort of go, right, now we need Medicare, more Medicare coverage for women, because there's more women trying to do it. The consumer organizations as well have a bigger body of people who are, you are lobbying the government for things as well. So the more women who seek it, that's going to propel it forward, because private midwives, we're busy doing private midwifery. So we rely on women and consumers to be really pushing the cause forward and you know, and that's where change happens. You know, mm-hmm. we had the mother of all rallies in 2009, I think it was, and that's when we got insurance. And when women come together, it happens. Like, but if we're sort of this solitary group of 200 midwives going, please give us Medicare, yeah. it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's great advocacy groups, you know, Home Birth Australia, Home Birth New South Wales does a lot of work. Mm-hmm. There's, yeah, there's organisations all over that are pushing for this. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. And I'm going to link to all of those organisations in the show notes as well, so that if women do want to take on an advocacy role to support home birth midwifery practice, they can do that. And also, as you said, just I love that, just to talk about home birth midwifery, to talk about your experience. If you've had a great experience, let other women know, because that creates demand and that is what's going to create change. I love it. Oh, it's been so much fun talking to you, Mel. I could talk to you for another hour, but
I know,
let you go, because you're a very busy woman.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mel. I just appreciate your time so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Wild Mother Podcast. I'm living and mothering on the unceded country of Dharawal people, and I gratefully acknowledge their ongoing work and the work of Indigenous people everywhere in the service of thriving life on Earth. Stay wild, mamas.